Thank you again for the opportunity to be back. And I have to start out with this because the first song we sang about Good, Good Father. Wow. I didn't know if I was going to be able to come up here after shedding some tears. It's been just a blessing to the last five weeks, and I think I'll have one more. Speaking on the prodigal son in the little church that I serve up near Drayton. And one of the things, as I shared last time I was here about being studying at Oak Hills, and I've wrapped that up now, it's understanding. I'm understanding how to look at the scriptures and how to understand to dive into it deeper than I ever have. I never thought that I would ever be able to preach five messages, and I believe there'll be a sixth on the prodigal son. There's so much there. And then when Kevin gave me this passage for this morning to talk again about a father and a son relationship. Wow. To come to it in the Old Testament, to see it differently in the Old Testament is not something I've spent a lot of time in, a lot of time preaching. So this morning, it's new to me. This is new. 2 Samuel is new in a way. But I come this morning again just excited about seeing that relationship again between a father and a son, and not a good one, but a one that God can use to teach us and share with us this morning. So if you would stand with me this morning, we'll read the first five verses of chapter 18 of 2 Samuel. And it begins, "Then David mustered the men who were with him and set over them commanders of thousands and commanders of 100. And David set out the army, one-third under the command of Joab, one-third under the command of Abishai, and the third, the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, and one-third under the command of Ittai, the Gittite. And the king said to the men, 'I myself will go out with you.' But the men said, 'You shall not go out, for if we flee, they will not care about us. But if half of us die, they will send... If half of us die, they will not care about us, but you are worth 10,000 of us. Therefore, it is better that you send help from the city.' The king said to them, 'Whatever seems best to you, I will do.' So the king stood at the side of the gate while the army marched out by the hundreds and the thousands. And the king ordered Joab and Abishai and Ittai, 'Deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom.' And all the people heard when the king gave orders to all the commanders about Absalom." May the Lord bless his word to his reading. You may be seated. This morning as I begin, this is exactly where I'm going to go start as far as the first area. And in that, my first point this morning is called Man Out. Man out. Why do I say that? What do I bring? What does this passage in the beginning speaking of as David is mustering his men to send them out in thousands and of hundreds? And he's commanding them are the three different commanders, and that was a very typical form of fighting, and to have three different commands, three different groups that went out. And the three different that went, and we had two brothers. Now, the interesting part when we come down to verse 2, and the end of it says, "The command of Abishai, the son of Zeruiah." Now, why would Zeruiah be mentioned? Zeruiah is a woman's name, typically not mentioned much in the scriptures. But Zeruiah is David's sister. And David has two of his nephews in command with him, Joab and Zeruiah are both commanders in David's army, and they're David's nephews. Now they go down, and "I myself will go out with you, but the men said, 'You shall not go out, for if we flee, they will not care about us.'" They were all about trying to take out David. And David, his commanders go out, if they take us out, you're worth 10,000 of us, but you are worth 10,000 of us. Therefore, it is better that you send us help from the city The king then said to them, "Whatever seems best to you, I will do." So the king stood at the side of the gate. David chose not to go out with the army. He chose to stay back, given his commander's advice or his commander's thought. That, "David, you're way more valuable to What's Up. They're going to be way more apt to get you and take you out. You stay back. We're going to go out and fight." Now, this seemed a little weird to me. It seemed a little bit off that David would go. But as we go on and we see what was shared, and then we come to the end of this area, to verse 5, and it says, "And the king order Joab and Abishai and Ittai, deal gently for my sake with the younger man Absalom." And all the people heard this when the king gave orders to the commanders about Absalom. As the men are going out to fight, David is sharing with them to deal gently with my son. Deal gently. He doesn't say here, "gently for my sake with the younger man Absalom." Doesn't say his son, but the younger man. Deal gently with him. Now, I would say this. As I had shared, why would the commander say, "David, you stay back"? My thought is in this, and if you're ever in battle, you can't be torn two ways. You have to be focused. And here, if David would have gone out with the troops, and he was saying to his commanders, "Deal gently with the young man Absalom," his allegiance to his own troops would have been divided. Because as we see as the story unfolds, David wants his son spared. And that can't happen. That's not part of God's plan. And here David would be caught in between. He would be going one way and maybe another. And this way, by him staying back, the men were able to go out and fight. As we continue, it says, "So the army went out into the field against Israel, and the battle was fought in the forest of Ephraim. And the men of Israel were defeated there by the servants of David. And the loss there was great on that day, 20,000 men. The battle spread over the face of all the country, and the forest devoured more people than that day than the sword." As we continue in the story, as the army goes out to fight. And it's interesting in this battle scene, in this dialogue that we're given, there's very few verses, very little given about the battle. We're told that 20,000 men went down. I'm not great. 20,000 men. And the battle spread over the face of the country, and the forest devoured more men than the sword. They were in rugged country. It wasn't where you would want to battle. Typically, where would you want to battle? Out in an open field where you can see the enemy and you can go after. Here they were fighting within the forest, and it was rugged. It's the best way to put it. And men were falling to their death within the forest, way more than the sword took out in this setting. And as we continue, it says, "And Absalom happened to meet the servants of David. Absalom was riding on his mule, and the mule went under the thick branches of a great oak. And his head caught fast in the oak, and he was suspended between heaven and earth. When the mule was under and went on, then a certain man, it was told Joab, 'Behold, I saw Absalom hanging in an oak.' Joab said to the man, 'Who told him?' 'What, you saw him? Why then did you not strike him there to the ground? I would have been glad to have given you 10 pieces of silver and a belt.' But the man said to Joab, 'Even if I felt in my hand the weight of 1,000 pieces of silver, I would not reach out my hand against the king's son. For in our hearing, the king commanded you and Abishai and Ittai, for my sake, protect the young man Absalom. On the other hand, if I had dealt treacherously against this life and there is nothing hidden from the king, then you yourself would have stood aloof.' Joab said, 'I will not waste time like this with you.'" As we look at this section, when you try to see what's unfolding for us, we see that Absalom was riding on his mule in one, under a fig tree, an oak tree, and was captured. Not said he was hanged. He was there. He was still alive, and we'll see that in a moment. But he was captured by a tree and hanging there in midair. And a certain man said to Joab, "Behold, I saw Absalom hanging in an oak." And Joab said to the man, "Who told him? What, you saw him, and then you did not strike him there to the ground?" This, we're not given a name, this young man, this soldier, saw Absalom hanging in the tree. And he didn't go up and he didn't kill him. He didn't take him out. And that's the other army's commander. I mean, what an opportunity. He's captive. I mean, he's not going to go anywhere. He's stuck in a tree. And he goes back and tells Joab, "Well, I saw him. He's in a tree." And Joab says, "You didn't take him out? You had the opportunity? I would have given you 10 pieces of silver and a belt." But what's interesting is what comes next. He said, "Even if I have felt in my hand the weight of 1,000 pieces of silver, I would not reach out my hand against the king's son. For in our hearing, the king commanded that Abishai and Ittai, for my sake, protect the young man Absalom." The reason this soldier did not take out Absalom is he heard David, when David left, when the men were leaving, that David said, "Protect this young man Absalom." And he said, "How can I go against what the king commanded?" Now that's a great question for a soldier to ask. How can I go against the king? But Joab knew what was to come. Joab knew that he was a soldier. Joab knew that he was the head of one of the thirds of the army, and their goal was to take out Absalom and his army. So what does Joab do as we continue on? In verse 14, it says, Joab said, "I will not waste time like this with you." And he took 3 javelins in his hand and thrust them into the heart of Absalom while he was still alive in the oak. And the 10 young men, Joab's armor bearers, surrounded Absalom and struck him and killed him. Here we see Absalom taken out. Absalom's life out. As we come to the second point, as I had shared, the second point now is called man down. Joab's out. Joab's down. They took him out. They'd killed him. He was kind of a sitting duck, you could say. And in this, as the men come, and Joab brings his armor bearers with, and they surrounded Absalom, and they struck him and killed him. See, in our lives, as Christians, and part of my illustration here is to look at what are those things in our lives that maybe we need to put to death. Maybe there's things in our lives that aren't doing us much good. They aren't doing much for the kingdom, to put it this way, in this illustration. What are some of those things that maybe we need to put to death in our own lives? Here was a rival to the kingdom put to death. And you know, the things in our lives at times that we do are a rival to God's kingdom, a rival to what God would want us to do or us to be. So I asked this morning and I asked myself, what are those things maybe in my own life that I need to put to death? But then we continue on in the story, and it says, then Joab blew the trumpet, and the troops came back from pursuing Israel, and Joab retained them. And he took Absalom and threw him into a great pit in the forest and raised over him a very great heap of stones. And all Israel fled, one to his own home. Now Absalom in his lifetime had taken and set up for himself the pillar that is in the king's valley, for he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. He called the pillar after his own name, and it is called Absalom's Monument to that day, to this day. Here we see even a greater demise to Absalom. Here they found a pit somewhere in the forest, and they threw him in it, and they covered him with stones, and they set the heaping of stones over him. See, in this time, both enemies and rivals to the king were put in the pit, were stoned. And here, Absalom, David's own son, is put in a pit, and many stones put over him. It's like a finishing touch, like saying, this is beyond. Not only is he dead, but we're going to make a spectacle of him. We're going to totally cover him. We're going to totally leave this kind of monument to this enemy, to this rival here. Wow. To see him not only killed, but then, and it's ironic because as we read the last couple of verses, it talked about Absalom making a monument to himself. And having this big monument about him, about how great he is or whatever, and where is he now? Piled under a bunch of stone. Not his name like raising above, but he's piled below a bunch of stone. Let us continue. As we go on to the verse 19, it says, and I had to go and look up this word because this name is tough for me. Ahimataz, I will say. And Ahimataz, the son of Zadok, said, "Let me run and carry the news to the king that the Lord had delivered him from the hand of his enemies." And Joab said to him, "You are not to carry the news today. You may carry news another day. But today you shall carry no news because the king's son is dead." I'll hold up there for a moment. Why is he not able to go and share this news with the king? See, he was known as a informant, as one that would go and bring news, but he typically brought good news. And in this, Joab was not going to send him to tell him the king the truth about his son. That's not typically what his role was. So as we continue, it says, "And then Joab said to the Cushite, 'Go tell the king that you have what you have seen.' The Cushite bowed before Joab and ran. Then Ahimataz, the son of Zadok, said again to Joab, 'Come what may, let me run after the Cushite.' And Joab said, 'Why will you run, my son? Seeing that you will have no regard for the news.'" He will have no regard for the news. "Come what may," he said, "I will run." So he said to him, "Run." Then Ahimaaz ran the way to the plain and outran the Cushite. Now David was sitting between the two gates, and the watchman went up to the roof of the gate of the wall. And when he had lifted up his eyes and looked, he saw a man running alone. The watchman called out and told the king. The king said, "Is he alone? There is news in his mouth." And he drew nearer and nearer. And the watchman saw another man running. And the watchman called to the gate and said, "See, another man running alone." The king said, "He also brings news." The watchman said, "I think the running of the first is like the running of Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok." And the king said, "He is a good man and comes with good news." Here we see there's two people bringing the news of David's death to the king. One originally was set up. Joab had set up this Cushite to take the news, but Joab was also hit up twice by Ahimaaz to do it also. And what's interesting, when we come to the end of this section, it says, "And the king said," well, I'm going to back up. The watchman said, "I think the running of the first is like the running of Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok." And the king said, "He is a good man and comes with good news." Little did David know, it wasn't going to be good news. There was good news to a point, no doubt. In fact, there was great news for the overall situation, but not for David's son. And then we continue. "Then Ahimaaz cried out to the king, all is well. And he bowed before the king with his face to the earth and said, blessed be the Lord your God, who has delivered up the men who raised their hand against my lord the king. Here he is saying, exactly, yes, there's good news. And yes, that there has been delivered up the men who have raised their hand against the Lord, the king. So he came and definitely gave the truth. Definitely said that the men that were against you are wiped out. But then we go on. And the king said, it is well with the young man Absalom? Ahimaaz answered, when Joab sent the king's servant, your servant, I saw the great commotion, but I did not know what it was. And the king said, turn aside and stand here. So he turned aside and stood still. It is well with the young man Absalom. See, Ahimaaz knew that Absalom was dead. But he couldn't come to the point of being able to share that with the king. So he kind of lied and made up a story and kind of said, well, you know, there was a great commotion when I left and I do not know what it was. And let it go from there. He told a partial truth. Couldn't get it to himself or couldn't do himself, bring himself to be able to tell the king the whole truth. And it's interesting because I don't know, and we don't know if he was just, as I had shared, a bearer of good news, that he brought good news to the king, but couldn't bring really, I won't say the greatest news, but it becomes that to get rid of his son. And then we continue. And behold, the Cushite came, and the Cushite said, good news for my lord, the king. For the Lord has delivered you this day from the hand of all who rose up against you. The king said to the Cushite, it is well with the young man Absalom. And the Cushite answered, may the enemies of my lord, the king, and all who rise up against you for evil be like this young man. And the king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, he said, oh, my son Absalom, would it that I have died instead of you, O Absalom, my son, my son. Here the full truth came, that Absalom was dead. And David now knew he was gone. He got the full truth from this Cushite who came and had shared. In my third point here, well, I'm going to share that for a moment. The king was deeply moved and went up in his chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, he said, oh, my son Absalom, would it that I have died instead of you. So when we look back at David's life and we look back to earlier in his life where it was said that David, the sword will never depart from your family. This is a continuation of that. That David had some troubles. David had some real issues with his family. And his sin continued to kind of pay the price. And this, in an instance, too, is also where the sword continued in David's life. He lost his son Absalom. But yet, what is what he shared was tough, definitely, for David to take. And I know in our lives at times, and in mine, in a way recently, there's news sometimes that comes that's hard to take. And it kind of sets us back, kind of takes us, makes us take a step back, makes us maybe really reevaluate some things. And it's tough to take. And David might have been feeling some guilt in this about his own son's death. But then we continue. And in this continuation, in the last portion that I have is what I have termed man up. Beginning in verse 1 and 19, it says, "And it was told Joab, behold, the king is weeping and mourning for Absalom. So the victory that day was turned into mourning for all the people. For the people heard that day, the king is grieving for his son. And the people stole into the city that day as people steal in who are ashamed when they flee in battle. The king covered his face, and the king cried with a loud voice, oh, my son Absalom, oh, Absalom, my son, my son. Then Joab came into the house to the king and said, you have today covered with shame the faces of all your servants who have this day saved your life in the lives of your sons and your daughters, in the lives of your wives and your concubines. Because you love those who hate you and hate those who love you. For you have made it clear today that commanders and servants are nothing to you. For today I know that if Absalom were alive and all of us were dead today, then you would be pleased. Now therefore, arise, go out and speak kindly to your servants. For I swear by the Lord that if you do not go, not a man will stay with you this night. And this will be worse for you than all the evil that has come upon you from your youth until now. Then the king arose and took his seat in the gate. And the people were all told, behold, the king is sitting in the gate. And all the people came before the king. What do we see here in the last portion? And I kind of say that David, it's time to man up. I mean, we already saw at the end of the last section, at the end of 18, where he's crying, oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, my son. And then it was told in the beginning of this, that behold, the king is weeping and mourning for his son. Yes, we know, and yes, definitely, it's sad. If any of us have lost a son or a daughter, a close loved one, we know that that's sad. We know death doesn't come easy. But then the king is grieving for his son, and the people stole into that city. And the part here is, they were told, the commanders were told to leave Absalom alone, and here Absalom's dead, and David is upset. David is mourning his son. But then Joab comes back on the scene, and he says, he came into the house of the king and said, you have today covered with shame the faces of all your servants who have this day saved your life and the lives of your son in your daughters, and the lives of your wives and your concubines. Here the army had taken and had saved all of David, all of his family, all of his wives, all of his concubines, and yet he's treating them they're sneaking back in the city, I guess the way to put it. They're sneaking back in like they did something wrong, like they should be in trouble. And that's not the way the soldiers should have had to come back. He said, you have covered today with shame the faces of your servants who this day have saved your life. For you have made it clear today that the commanders and the servants are nothing to you. For today I know that if Absalom were alive and all of us were dead, then you would be pleased. What would it be like to feel that? To know that the commander of the army, the king, it would be rather off have his son alive than all of his soldiers. Of all those that have fought to keep David safe, to be able to save his family, to be able to save the kingdom, and yet they're feeling like they got to slide back in. They got to kind of under the wire. And David is really letting, or Joab's really letting David have it. And he says, now therefore, go arise out and speak kindly to your servants. For I swear by the Lord, if you do not go, not a man will stay with you. I could see where they'd be ready to just give it up. Say, I mean, you're way more about your son. You care way more about your son than you care about us that went out and put our lives on the line for you. How would it feel to to feel about your king that way, that he cares more about his family than he does the Lord. And see, the part here is as we come to it, well, I'm going to continue a moment. And then he said, and this will be worse for you than all the evil that has come upon you from your youth until now. Things are definitely difficult for David. And definitely not in a good place with all that has unfolded. And now to get beat up by Joab, one of his commanders. See, in this had to happen. If we look for the whole story, and you've been walking through 2 Samuel, I don't know how long now, we see that God's overall plan will prevail. See, it's not about what David wanted to happen. As much as he wanted his son to be able to be alive. And wouldn't any of us want our children to be alive? We wouldn't want them taken down. But Absalom was an enemy of God and had to be taken out. In God's overall plan. In fact, I love what was written in the commentary for this that Pastor Kevin so graciously gave me and I was able to study from. In essence, what it said is this isn't about David. It isn't about David's reign. It isn't about David's desire and David's kingdom or whatever. It's overall about God's kingdom. This goes much bigger, much farther back than just David. That God's overall plan is going to prevail. See, this morning my plan didn't prevail like I wanted it to. I'll put it that way. There's much more to it. But I see it in my own life this morning that God's plan has to prevail. That God's plan has to be at work and will be at work and will be accomplished no matter what we do. And that's where we have to focus. That's where we have to hone in on. That's what is most important. So this morning, as I wrap up this to a point, where maybe in our own lives do we need to man up? Do we need to take a stand? Do we need to look at things in this world, and in the world we know is going crazy. There's so much going on. The news is just full of ugliness. But where in our lives may be the Spirit speaking to us to man up, to step up, to say, you know, let's get out of this grieving deal. Let's quit the way that maybe we want things to happen and see what God wants to happen. Get involved on what God's overall plan is and what he might be calling us to in that plan. And it may not be easy. I can guarantee you probably it won't be easy. Because it's getting more and more difficult for us as Christians in this world, where the world more and more wants to take us out, and we may be challenged more and more to have to take a stand for God and his word. I've shared with my family before and that there may come a day when speaking here might cost me my life. I don't know when somebody may come into a church that I may preach, and it happens across our country where guys are taken out by gunpoint. Or my family might have to come and visit me at the jail because what I say is going to be considered something that is going to put me in prison. Folks, where might we need to take a stand and man up ourselves? So last thoughts. Last thoughts, and very simply, God has no rivals. God has no rivals. People may think they're a rival. People may think they're going to win. People may think that they've got a one-up on God, Or they understand this thing, and they're a commander of another army that's going to take him out. Well, folks, he has no rivals. And his plan is going to continue. His plan is going to work. His plan is going to succeed amongst any other plan that may be out there. And to go right along with that, every opposition to God's plan will be eliminated. In the end, God wins. In the end, he's the victor. And all those rivals, any of those that are going to come against him, are going to be eliminated. Game over. You're done. God wins. Unfortunately, many people haven't come to that thought yet. They may think they're going to win, but eventually will be eliminated, just like Absalom was. And then lastly, I didn't talk about Joab as much as I wanted to this morning, but in the title this morning, and the title, by the way, comes from the study book, where the author says himself that a safe kingdom, a sad king. Well, in what Joab did this morning, in what we read, Joab made it a safe kingdom. By taking out Absalom and really following what God had planned and what he had unfolded, yes, he went against the king, but what unfolded is exactly what God had planned. Not even what David had planned, but Joab made it a safe kingdom, but he saddened the king. Yeah, he was one of the king's commanders, and he really did what any good king, any good head commander would do, is to take out the enemy. And here it just happened to be David's son. So folks, this morning, yeah, we see that we are looking to a safe kingdom run by our God, a safe kingdom that is already established for us, a safe kingdom that is coming. Let us not be swayed, let us not be detoured from the things of God and the things of his word in the midst of this world. That there may be times in our lives, and they may come sooner than we believe, that we're going to have to take a stand, and we're going to have to believe that God is the victor and that God will prevail in the end. Let us pray. Heavenly Father, I do give you praise, being the good, good Father that you are. That's who you are. And Lord, I thank you for your goodness. I thank you for your promise to us that, Lord, you are in charge and you are the victor. That as we walk through this Old Testament, as we walk through the whole Bible, Lord, we see that you continually have victory after victory after victory. And one day, Lord, you will have the ultimate victory when you come back to this earth. And you will have finished off death for final. So Lord, thank you for your word. Thank you for what it teaches us. Thank you for how it challenges us. And thank you, Lord, for each one here. And I pray, Lord, that it would bear fruit in their lives.